Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and joining us today is Mr. Michael Parrish. He's the CEO of Moving and Grooving Moving Company. And you guys not only move people commercially, but you specialize in helping nonprofits move families, individuals, or other organizations while helping them with their community outreach programs. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing all right.
First of all, welcome.
How about yourself, Chris?
I'm doing just great. And by the way, welcome to Dallas-Fort Worth, because I know you've got locations in Detroit and now Dallas. And what I really am impressed with is that you are a moving company that has actually done a lot of community outreach by stepping in for nonprofits when they actually need to move people or help people move. Is that right?
Yep, absolutely. One of the first things we did when we decided to come to the DFW area was to get involved with some nonprofit organizations. So we've been involved in like blanket handouts, food handouts downtown. We set up for a Martin Luther King event, just things like that.
That's fantastic.
That's all we made. I'm like, those nice connections, you might say.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I
I'm
think
sorry.
That's
I'm on this
no,
time.
That's
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Again, that's what it's all about. It's like connecting people, and like I said, you move into the DFW area with your company. But you were doing this in Detroit as well. Can you talk about some of the things you were doing in Detroit with the different community outreach groups there, too, as the nonprofits? And I think you even had a relationship and still probably do with the Detroit Pistons with their outreach programs.
Absolutely. Well, we've been in business here for over 5 years. We started right here in the Metro Detroit area with one truck and a dream since then. Mm-hmm. We've expanded to about 5 trucks down here. We specialize in the residential moving. We also do commercial moving, but our work with the nonprofit organizations up here has been phenomenal. Whether it's doing some stuff like I did down there with the homeless, or we've actually moved whole senior citizens' apartment buildings. Like, it was a big flood down here last September, and we had to move 3 floors of senior citizens. Just things like that is what makes the business worth it, basically.
Exactly. It makes it worth it. Again, it's like it's about being a part of the community. It's one thing to be in business in the community, but, you know, again, when everybody helps each other, we all win, right?
Absolutely. I agree.
And there's a group down here in Dallas called the Urban Specialists, and they're the ones that got me in touch with you and talked about the different things you were doing. Corey, in particular, was telling me about you. Can you talk about how you developed a relationship with Urban Specialists? Because they've been doing great things down here in DFW, as well as all over the country.
I owe Corey, really. Corey has been like my introduction to Dallas. He's not the first person I met down there, but since I've met him, he's pretty much been my eyes down there. Anybody that I need to know, if he think I needs to know him, he gets me in front of him. He makes the connections, and it's been working out great so far. The work that they do in the community is parallel to the organization I work with up here in Detroit. And the guy up here in Detroit, he actually suggested I get in touch with them down there, and that's really how we got rolling.
Yes, it's called networking. In fact, that's one of the biggest things in the world today. It's like, okay, it's one thing to do a great job in your business or a great job in your community, but you're nowhere without connecting to people. And I think also the seal of approval as well.
It's not what you know, it's who you know. And the longer I've been in business, I'm starting to see that's really true.
What has been some of the challenges? Like, let's say you wanted to, you mentioned you moved an entire senior citizens home, a whole apartment complex. Can you talk about some of the challenges of putting that together? And some of the benefits?
Yeah, the biggest challenges, honestly, just to be honest, just getting them to move wasn't too hard. The biggest challenges was organizing the people already had scheduled to move and trying to get them to understand that I have to get the senior citizens moved.
Right.
They got no air going on. So the biggest challenges was trying to adjust my schedule to accommodate, I think it was 48 apartment buildings.
My goodness.
And still trying to get to my other moves. But other than that, though, it was worth it. Two of my staff members actually had auntie inside the building. So it was kind of personal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned the personal. See, that's part of it. You know, again, a lot of people with nonprofits are very empathetic towards, you know, the different people that they work with. When you're talking about seniors, you know, and you mentioned a couple of your crew had some aunties that were living in that same place. It's like you want to be very careful with the moving the items of people who are elderly because those are like precious to them. It's not just, oh, it's a dresser and we can get a new one.
And a lot of times it's all they have is their prized possessions.
Yeah.
And we try to treat each individual move like it's our family anyway. Mm-hmm. So we always try to go above and beyond. It can be a college student or a senior citizen. We still try to aim to please regardless.
Exactly. So when did you first, what was like the first nonprofit or, you know, basically a community outreach thing that you did in Detroit and then bring up the ones here in North Texas as well? And again, it's one thing to get the networking involved, but then how did the very first move actually work? And that's why people started thinking about you guys.
Right. Well, in Detroit, the first nonprofit organization I started with, it's a group up here called Neighborhood Specialists. Mm-hmm. And they specialize in getting people housing. They first step is putting them in a hotel to see if they can maintain themselves properly. After they pass that, they get them an apartment. We were their preferred moving companies, so we gave a big, big discount, and it kind of went from there on the networking.
Yeah.
And down in Dallas, the first organization I got with was Urban Specialists. And from there, the charity event we did, it was just a lot of vendors. It wasn't an organization in particular. Mm-hmm. I believe Urban Specialists, they organized it. And a lot of other vendors just came. But from there, I just been able to make a lot of connections.
That is fantastic because, again, what you do, it's like you're filling in the breach. You're filling in the gap because there's a role to be played to help these things move along. Can you talk about, you know, some of the positive things you feel on that particular end when you guys make an impression like that with community outreach and nonprofit work, and let alone the fact that you do a great job with your regular clients that you move?
Right. Well, I believe in any business relationship, it has to be some level of respect and like there. So even before we do business, I like to make a good personable impression. I like to let them know I'm coming from the heart. I'm not looking for nothing back in return. If I say I want to do some volunteer work, it's because I want to do it. It's not because I'm looking for something in return. And once I show my value on that, usually it's kind of like it's just 1, 2, 3 after that because I've shown my value already.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Michael Parrish. He's the CEO of Moving and Grooving Moving Company. How did you come up with the name Moving and Grooving? Because that's catchy.
It's a saying up here in Detroit that a lot of people just use all the time. Like, to give you an example, if you call your buddy on the phone, like, hey, man, tell me what you got going on today. Like, I'm just out here moving and grooving around.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a saying, and it kind of just caught.
Yep.
And I actually went and got it trademarked, and so I don't want nobody else to try to use it. So I went and got it trademarked because it is pretty catchy.
Exactly, exactly. Smart move. We're talking about Michael Parrish. And Michael, you mentioned, you know, you guys are down here in Dallas now. What prompted you to expand to Dallas Fort Worth? I think you have a client or a business relationship with the former mayor of Detroit, who's now down here at South Lake.
Yep. So I definitely have a nice relationship with the former mayor of Detroit. That's Kwame Kilpatrick. He's actually the one who introduced me to Urban Specialists. Mm-hmm. But as far as me getting down to the DFW area, a lot of people from Detroit were moving down there. So in like the summer of 2021, I moved like two or three people down there. And the next summer, it was the same thing. And I started doing my research down there, and I actually just fell in love with the city, for real.
I can see why, man. A lot of things happen down here in Dallas.
I came down there and fell in love with the city. It's like, it really makes you realize, like, okay, I'm from a big city, but this is a big city right here.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, Michael, when you come down here to Dallas and your crew's down here in Dallas, what kind of things are they asking you about or keeping you up on? I mean, not just the nonprofit and the community outreach, about business itself in Dallas. What are they telling you?
They're telling me
opportunities.
It's a lot of opportunities, and it's best to be bicultural down there.
Yeah.
Best to be bicultural down there.
You got to be able to fit in, get in where you fit in, and be able to relate to all kinds of people. Yeah.
Absolutely. So you might want to be a little fluid in Spanish, like just be bicultural and broaden your horizons. A lot of opportunity.
Yeah. How many people on your crew down here in North Texas? How many people in your organization down here?
I have two crews of three. So a six-man crew, but it's two crews. So six in total.
Mm-hmm. And
two trucks. Mm-hmm. So we're capable of moving one sofa from your house to your granny's house or a five-bedroom mansion from top to bottom. That's full service moving company. You don't have to lift a finger. We break furniture down. We pad wrap stuff. We're licensed. We're insured. We offer extra insurance on those personal items, maybe like some china or piano or something like that. Mm-hmm. There's nothing that you will need that we will not have. It will be a stress-free, seamless move that I can guarantee.
Michael Parrish, I got to ask you this because I've been always wondering every time, you know, my family and I, we would move, you know, every 7 or 8 years we might move to a different house, or you just never know.
Gotcha.
But you guys, movers, are strong, and you know angles. I will say this because I've lived in homes that had upstairs and downstairs, and I'm like, how are they going to get this couch down these stairs? But y'all know angles. Y'all know how to get a refrigerator through a front door. They're just like, but that's impossible. And you're so you. How do you find guys that are so strong like that? I mean, I don't want to call it old man strength because you guys are kind of young. But still, I can't explain it.
The longer you're in this moving business, you'll realize it's not about being strong. It's about being smart. The smarter you are,
the angles,
the lighter the item is for some reason. You know them angles, and it's a piece of cake.
Yep. I'm just totally impressed with that.
So it does help to have some young, strong guys around, but the one that's doing all the thinking is doing the most work.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's really more mental, but like in the summertime, when guys are out of college, I do like to keep some young, strong guys around. It makes it easier on my older guys. But those older guys, they just know those angles.
Yes, they do. I'm very impressed with that. And so how did you even get into the business itself? Like you said, you had a truck and a dream. What prompted you to say, you know what, I want to be in the moving business?
Well, to make a long story short, I had a buddy. He's big in the construction business down here. And his company owns a lot of apartment buildings. And I was helping him do some work. They needed help getting supplies from like Home Depot or Lowe's back to the apartment buildings. So I was renting a U-Haul and was doing that for them. I was like a side job. Mm-hmm. And the more they grew, I grew, and I invested in my own truck and I started growing with them. They went from like two big apartment complexes to like seven complexes, and I went from one truck to three trucks.
Wow.
And then when they got a little slow, I went off on my own and started the moving business.
Mm-hmm.
And it took off from there.
I
haven't looked back since.
There's a lot of people who, you know, listen to this show. They're entrepreneurs at heart, and there's a lot of entrepreneurs out there. Can you talk about how you really have to have courage to, you know, not have a 9-to-5 job, to just go out there and say, you know what, I believe in myself, I believe in my business, I'm going to make this thing work. Can you talk about, you know, what it took for you to say, okay, no more 9-to-5, this is what I love to do, and I want to be able to work for myself?
It just took a lot of faith.
Yeah.
The type of job I had a 9-to-5, but I was an independent contractor. So I was a truck driver. So
okay.
I worked when I wanted to. I didn't have to go in at a certain time. I worked when I wanted to. But on the flip side, if I didn't work, I didn't make no money. So I can work as much as I wanted to or as less as I wanted to. So I already had the mind frame of working for myself anyway. So it was kind of easy to transition to that.
Mm-hmm.
And once you realize, okay, I'm working for myself now, it kind of actually makes you work harder.
Right.
You don't want to let yourself down.
And so you said, okay, like I said, you got to have a lot of belief in yourself, a lot of faith. And again, you know, and then when you expand it, like you're in two states now. When you expand it, you really have to have a lot of faith. And like I said, the courage to say, you know what, I know we can do this. Right.
Yeah. And it all starts from those connections, because my buddy who I was telling you about, he just called me on the strength of, because he know I know how to drive the big trucks. He's like, hey, man, I know somebody. I mean, I need a person who can drive these trucks and go get these products for us.
Mm-hmm.
That's how that relationship started. And I just said, I'm going to use my money to go buy my own truck, so I don't got to rent trucks no more. And I just invested in myself like that.
And to come full circle with it, along the way, you say, you know what? Let's help out some of these people with the nonprofits. Let's help out some of these community out. Reach programs. Let's help move some of the seniors. Let's help them hand out the turkeys or deliver the clothes or things like that. I mean, that's what puts a warm feeling in your heart and give you strength sometimes to carry on when it might be a tough day, right?
Absolutely. And then once I grew and I got my name out here, I started doing stuff like I sponsored a couple families for Christmas last year. I actually sponsored a family down there in Dallas last year for Christmas. I forgot to mention that. I apologize. Nice.
Now go ahead. Tell that story.
Yep. So I have a friend down there who's originally from Detroit. Her name is Ashley Bean. She wanted to sponsor a family for Christmas in honor of her mother who passed away a few years ago. So she's a great friend of mine. So I decided to partner with her. We randomly picked a family off a Facebook drawing we had, and we were able to provide them a nice Christmas.
That is fantastic. And you know what's great about it all? Like I said, you're able to I don't want to call it juggle, but you're able to assist people as well as run your business, because, you know, if you can't help yourself, you can't help anybody else. Can you tell people if they wanted to try to work for you, how they can get in touch, or if they needed your services, whether it's in a non-profit capacity where they might be able to, you know, work something out with you where you can help them, help their people? Or can you tell anybody who's just interested because they love your story that, you know, I think I want to use them to move?
Absolutely. I promise you, this is going to be the easiest number you ever hear. So the number to get in contact with us, whether it's for, if you're looking for moving services, if you're a non-profit organization, if you're looking for employment, the way to get in contact with us is area code 214-214-MOVE.
Wow.
Double area code MOVE. 214-214-MOVE.
How in the world did you get that? I say that because, I mean, a lot of people try to get a special number and they're not even in business. How are you able to get AT&T to get you that number? That's impressive.
I had to use those connections we was talking about again.
It's a who you know world, isn't it?
It's a who-you-know world, but when you think of moving, 214, double area code MOVE. Dallas, MOVE, 214-214-MOVE.
I love that. Michael Parrish, CEO of Moving and Grooving Moving Company. Is there anywhere online where people can check you out and kind of, you know how people, they like to look it over like they're looking at Amazon, you know?
Absolutely. We have a website, www.movingandgrooving.com.
Spell that excuse for me. Andy. Spell that for me.
Moving and Grooving is spelled a special way. So it's www.moving, that's M-O-V-I-N, hyphen, the letter N, hyphen, grooving, G-R-O-O-V-I-N.com. And it's the same thing on Instagram and Facebook, Moving and Grooving.
That is
spelled the same way.
That is fantastic. So a lot of your business is referrals, or you actually get some first-time people calling in or people seeing the stuff online?
A lot of my business is referrals because I've learned my best way of marketing is doing great work and word of mouth. So a lot of people are referrals, return clients, or people who we've moved before, like great on the word of mouth.
And if they can't remember how to get a hold of you, they can always check in with the Urban Specials Specialist, and they will highly recommend, correct?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
He is Michael Parrish, the CEO of Moving and Grooving Moving Company, and they are getting things done here in North Texas, helping out nonprofits and different organizations with their community outreach and more. Thank you, Michael. Appreciate you joining us.
No problem. Thank you for having me, Chris.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
And joining us right now is a good friend. I'm going to call him a good friend because he's a great guy and we've done things before in the past. He's the great Lucas Shipman, the executive director of Happy Hills Farm. This is a unique working farm and campus that provides academics, spiritual development, sports, music, and arts programs for children in need from all over the world. Lucas, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Chris. Thanks for having me on again. Always a pleasure.
And it's a pleasure because, ironically, later today, later this afternoon, you're having the big annual fundraiser. And can you tell everybody what that's all about? And then we'll dig in a little deeper about Happy Hills Farm, for those who don't know anything about it. Talk about today's
event. Yeah, absolutely. So later today at Cinnamon Creek Ranch in Roanoke at 5 p.m., we're going to have our big kickoff to our golf tournament, which is actually tomorrow on Monday at Trophy Club. And so tonight at Cinnamon Creek Ranch, we're just essentially celebrating all the good work that happens out at Happy Hill Farm. We're going to have dinner and drinks and axe throwing and a great silent auction and a live auction. Looking forward to connecting with donors. All the golfers will be there to pre-register. And it's just a great event. It's one of our biggest fundraisers. And we always look forward to it. Great opportunity to hear about what's happening at Happy Hill Farm.
I've had the pleasure of hosting a couple of these events that you guys do. And this year, you're going to have the great Scott Murray.
Ah, wonderful friend. You know, I was catching up with him and it's been a few years since I've seen him around town and all the events that I've been to that he MCs. He's fantastic, a real pro, and was a good friend of my grandfather's as well. And so early on in the history of Happy Hill Farm, Scott was around, had us on the evening broadcast a lot as he talked about sports and caring for kids. Yeah. So it's a long relationship there. Excited to have him.
You know what else I also love with this event? You know, you have food, you have great people, and usually you have some barbecue. Is there going to be some barbecue on tap later on today?
I think so. So it's either barbecue or fajitas, and if I get it wrong, somebody will be mad. So I'll put them both on the table.
There you go. Can't lose either way. It's going to be great. It's going to be great times. And again, it's a very relaxed atmosphere, and you get to see what Happy Hills Farms is all about if you're not if you're not aware. But the ones who are attending, they're pretty much aware. Can you talk about the different people that show up for the event and the different people who are always a part of it on that side of it, on the partnership side?
Yeah, absolutely. So this really is our kickoff party for our golf tournament. So mm-hmm. tomorrow morning on Monday the 29th, we're playing. Shotgun starts 9 a.m. We're on both courses there at Trophy Club. And that's just a huge opportunity for people to support the school and to also do something fun on a Monday. And so mm-hmm. this party tonight at Cinnamon Creek Ranch is really a celebration of the work that we're doing with kids, and a lot of folks come out that are golfers that are going to play tomorrow morning, but a lot of folks come out that just want to hear more. We have alumni speak. Like I said, we have a live and a silent auction. I talk about our program and kind of walk people through what we do. We're actually entering into year 50. This fall is kicks off our 50th year of serving kids, and a lot of people don't know about us. We're you know, we're probably an hour and a half from wherever you're listening outside of the Metroplex, and you know, a lot of people haven't been out there, and so things like this and these events and the golf tournament are just a great way to share what's actually happening at Happy Hill Farm.
Well, let's share just a little bit. For those who don't know, Happy Hills Farms transforms the lives of high potential children facing low opportunity situations. Friendship, partnership, they're able to show kids love, give them a great education, help them raise themselves up to become successful adults. And it's all on a farming background. This was so amazing about what you're doing, because I find it, you know, very impressive that, you know, different organizations help kids in different backgrounds, and they might help them with their schoolwork, or they might provide a campus where they can, you know, further their education. But you guys have a situation where they're actually out working a farm as well, which makes it not only a challenge, but it makes it kind of fun and unique and something they'll never forget the rest of their lives.
Yeah. So we're really blessed. I mean, we do operate on a 500-acre farm. And so the name came from my grandfather, who started it in 1975. He was a pastor who just basically felt God's call in his life to create a place for kids that just needed structure. You know, Happy Hill Farm isn't a residential care facility. It's right. not a military school. Mm-mm. We take kids that just need opportunity. That's their background, is they're coming out of a low opportunity, you know, family or school district, or maybe part of the world, because we take international kids too. And, you know, there's something about just getting a kid out of some of these difficult urban environments and bringing them out into a wide open space. And so that's what we provide. We don't have dorms. We have homes. And so it's eight boys or eight girls in a house with resident parents. And those resident parents, they're not teachers. They're not coaches. Their job is to just care for those kids. So they care for their emotional health, spiritual health, making sure they're turning their assignments in and getting along and maturing and growing up. It's a family model. And so that's just a huge blessing. So many different things we're able to offer, unlike most boarding schools, because of the environment. Yeah, really mm-hmm. blessed.
Can you talk about the age range of some of the kids? In other words, some of the younger ones, what are the ages of them, and some of the older ones? Because I know you take them basically all the way up to college level.
Yeah, so we're a K through 12th grade school. Most of the kids that board there on campus are 10 and up. But we also have a day school population. And so mm-hmm. those are kids that are coming from the community that just want a sort of a private school experience. But the majority of the kids who attend our school live there year round. So they're about 10 to 18 years old from all over the world. We got a lot of kids from DFW and also from the United States, but we have a large international population as well. And so that's just a network of social workers and coaches and pastors that identify the types of students that have a lot of drive and potential, and they just need opportunity. And so that's what we've been doing for 50 years, is filling in that opportunity gap.
The last few years when I've been talking with you or being out there, I've met some of the kids from all different parts of the world. Can you name some of the countries? Because it's very impressive. It's like, wow, you guys have a heck of an outreach program.
Yes. So we've got kids from Ukraine and Serbia and Montenegro and also from Rwanda and places in Central and South America. And it's really just a testament to just the day and age we live in now. When I grew up at Happy Hill Farm, so I went to school there, K through 12th grade, and it was mostly American kids, and everything is so global now. And so one of the blessings for all the students that go through our program is when they get into college, which most all of them go on to actually go to a 4-year university, they're prepped, they're ready to go, because those campuses are international, they're global, they're going to hear different languages, they have to figure out how to interact with different cultures. And our kids are already prepped for that because they may have lived in a house where, four kids were from overseas. And so it's just a great opportunity for the kids.
Yeah, it opens their eyes to there's the real world. It's not just something I've seen online or on television. It's like, wait a minute, this is real. There are people who live all over the world, and you get to know each other, and you find out you have a lot of things in common, which leads me to ask a question. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people ask this. How do the kids from other countries, do they speak English to a degree? And then how much do you share the languages so that everybody kind of fits in?
So they all are proficient at speaking English. So most of the countries that I named earlier, English is really accepted as a business language or a second language. And
Let me stop you
places
right there.
like,
Let me stop you right there because I think that's a something that's very important, because a lot of people in the United States don't really even look at it like that. It's like, wait a minute, around the world, most kids grow up learning some form of English because that's how you do business. And in our country, it's like, oh, we're just English dominant, and every now and then we might learn some Spanish. But around the world, if you want to do business with anybody, because a lot of people travel who speak English, not just United States and England, but they speak English, it's like you kind of know, you need to know that language.
It's really good for our American kids to learn that and to be in that environment and go, man, many of them are surprised, like, wow, the work that a lot of these international kiddos have put in already to their education, and they show up here. And I mean, there's so many studies out about the benefit of being, bilingual, multilingual, and to be able to have a campus like that. We have a wonderful ESL instructor, an amazing Spanish instructor, and so they manage, and help our students, find that common language in English, which is obviously what their, education is through. But then also, in the house, and out on campus, I mean, I hear everything, because we rarely have just one kid from one country. So you'll hear all of these, Slavic languages and African languages, and it's beautiful. I love the sound of it.
You know what's amazing? I got to bring up this little anecdote to throw at you. Okay, Dallas Mavericks are a very international team. The players are from literally all over the world. And everybody knows Luka Doncic is from Slovenia, which is Eastern Europe. But always surprises a lot of fans is that not only is English not his second language, it may be not even his third language. Let me explain. Luka speaks Slovenian first, then he speaks Serbian second. He was playing European basketball, where they won the championship, in Spain for Real Madrid. So Spanish is his third language, and then he speaks English. And this little story, I'll never forget this as long as I live. When he was a rookie, the Mavericks played an exhibition game, or maybe it was a regular season. Yeah, it was a regular season game against the Detroit Pistons in Mexico. And I'm not making this. You'll love his story. So at the time, Blake Griffin, he superstar former, he just retired. Blake Griffin, he got on the microphone first to address the crowd for the Pistons, and he said, no, actually, it was Luka first. Luka had to speak to the crowd. And he addressed the crowd, and the first thing he did was fluently spoke Spanish. And the crowd in
Oh,
Mexico went nuts. They're like, oh my God, he speaks Spanish. That's our
couldn't
guy.
believe it.
And then Blake Griffin had to follow that. So,
Oh, that's no
Blake,
fun.
yeah, exactly. Blake grew up in Oklahoma, and but he said, and he's funny, and he was like, well, whatever he said. You can go to YouTube and you can see it. It is
I gotta
hilarious, but
watch
it's
it.
like, hey, Luka is Luka, and and to this day, from time to time, we'll ask Luka to speak to the crowd at the American Airlines Center in English and in Spanish, and you know, he doesn't speak that much English, but he does know it really, really well. And of course, on the basketball court, he knows all the basketball terms in English, and he and those guys get to talking trash to each other. He can talk trash in English.
Oh, yeah.
It is too funny. But, yeah, I bring this up because, in all seriousness, with the kids out there at Happy Hills Farms, I mean, it's one thing that they're learning their education, but they're also they're playing sports, they're doing arts programs, music, spiritual development. So all these languages are just helpful.
Very helpful. Yeah, I mean, when you look at the full panorama, like I said earlier, you know, being on a 500-acre campus, you know, we have space for a pool, we have space for a gym, we have space for a brand new track and field facility that's about 6 or 7 years old now, where the boys play soccer. Mm. And so, you know, the amount of sports that are offered and the different things that they can be involved in, you know, academically, but then extracurricular wise, we really, you know, we offer so many different things because these kids are coming from such varied backgrounds that we want them to find the thing that God made them to do, that they can, you know, be the person they should be and all that they can be. And so for some
of those
kids,
are you trying to say you're not limiting them? You're not limiting them? You're letting them say,
never.
You know what? Yeah, I think I'm pretty good at this. Well, guess what? We got something for you.
Exactly. And, you know, any kid like that, if you give them opportunity, they're going to rise to it. They're going to grab it. And we're very proud of our alumni. When you look through 50 years of graduates, I mean, you know, these are truly the next generation of leaders. We have people in city government that graduated, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. Lots of teachers, lots of missionaries, lots of business owners. And most importantly, I think a lot of really solid moms and dads. So you see that generational change where no matter where the kid came from or the kind of background they had or whatever difficulties were going on in their family life or the country they were from, you know, you see the whole family tree kind of shift in a different direction. And that's really what's kept us going. I mean, like I said, my grandfather started it. My whole family's still involved. Mm-hmm. And to see God work in that way is really special.
You mentioned your grandfather started it. Could you talk about what gave him the idea to create this program and this facility? I shouldn't even say the farm, the whole lifestyle, because it's actually brilliant. It's a brilliant idea. And you know, it works because you're still around 50 years later, stronger than ever. What was his idea?
Yeah, so he was basically kind of minding his own business as a faithful preacher in a small town in 1974. And the marshal in that county had a couple girls that were truant. They couldn't keep them in school. They asked some questions, found out that the dad had passed away and the mom was in prison. And so they had to figure out something to do with these kids. And so he did what I guess you did in a small Texas town in 1974. He took him to the preacher and he said, hey,
straighten them out.
You need to, you need to figure out what to do here. We're kind of at our limit. And that really started a process of my grandparents traveling around, looking at residential care facilities, children's homes. What do they do good? What isn't going so good? What are the challenges? What are some areas that they think that they could do better? And so they really felt like, wow, there's not a lot of options for kids that primarily just need structure. They just need to kind of know that they're in a safe environment. They need to know they're around people they can trust. And they need to know at this time, this is where they need to be. And so that kind of thing that really isn't a military school, it's not a mental health care facility, there just wasn't a lot out there like that. So he went to his father-in-law, who was developing 250 acres for a housing area, a residential neighborhood. And he said, hey, can I cash out everything, my retirement? Can I sell my house? Can I buy this plot of land from you and start this place for kids and start a nonprofit? And he said, yes. And so that was the first 250. And then we got another 250 some years later. And that's how we're 500 acres. And, you know, like I said earlier, when we talked about the homes that we have homes and not dorms, mm-hmm. And there was just a lot of things that he observed that were going well in kind of the childcare model and some things that weren't. And we decided to put a school there on campus to kind of make things easier. And you know, the biggest thing And the thing that we're most thankful for is that we're not a tax burden on anybody. So we've never, Happy Old Farm has never taken a penny of state or federal tax money. We're not a United Way agency. Tuition is about 8% of the total budget. So there's only a handful of kids that pay anything. And that's really just their parents trying to cover part of their health insurance. And so that means that 92% of our budget every year is covered by individuals. So these are just regular people who connect with what we're doing, who value the fact that we've been able to do it without state or federal help, and they want to help kids. And so some of them have faithfully sent in $25 a month for 40 years. Many people have left us in their estate, and all of that has added up to basically God sustaining us for 50 years through the gifts of individuals. It's pretty incredible.
It's very incredible. And I can't even say this enough. By the way, we're talking with Lucas Shipman. He's the executive director of Happy Hills Farm. I can't say this enough. The fact that in a way you guys are saving lives, because without, you know, Happy Hills Farms, who knows what would have happened to any of these kids from all over the world, the kids from North Texas. And you mentioned, you know, the truants way back in the day, and they needed some structure. It was like they were going wild. These girls were going wild because they had no structure in their life. And in my mind, part of structure, and not every quote-unquote family has a mother and a father, or, you know, maybe the parents are young and they can't really keep the kids, or they don't know what it's like to be parents. So some kids don't even know what consequences are. And it's not about discipline, a physical discipline. It's about just knowing, well, guess what? You can do it this way, but guess what will happen? Or if you do it this way, guess what good will happen? It's just about knowing the boundaries. And guess what? You can create a greater space if you do it the correct way.
Yeah. And, you know, they're going to, all the kids that we have are going to grow up. And, and what we tell them is you're going to get out into the world, and there's systems and structures in place, many of them good in our society, that, you know, you're always going to probably have a boss. You're going to have to think about how you behave in public. Yeah. And it, when you factor all those things in, I mean, if the teaching and the training doesn't start young, why are we surprised when young people go astray?
Exactly.
Right. Like, why are we surprised? I mean, they got to have that foundation. And so that's, I'd say it's a good majority of what we do is, you know, back in the day, they used to call it civics, huh? And there's not a lot of that anymore.
Right.
Like, we're going to actually talk about what it looks like to be a servant leader in society. And that's what we want these kids to be and do.
Oh yeah. And again, the structure is in place at Happy Hills Farms. You mentioned your grandfather was pastor. What about your dad?
So my dad and uncle have been there pretty much their entire adult life. My dad still runs all the operations. So everybody there on campus, from, you know, the folks that keep everything tidy to the people that actually work with the kids, they all report to him, and he loves his job and does a great job. As you can imagine, he's basically a city manager, because we've got 4.5 miles of road. We have four water wells. We have our own sewage treatment plant. He's a city manager. My uncle has done all of the finances and all the reporting that we're required to do as a nonprofit with me for his whole life and now my whole working career. And so we're the ones that are sending the letters out to the kind donors and interacting with them and you know, making space for them to be able to come down and see what their prayers and their gifts have provided. And my sister runs our school. And so she got an education degree and worked in the public school system and came back to the farm, and as we call it, and she works there and runs the school. And so, you know, we're very blessed. Family ministries are hard. They're challenging. Family business, it's all tricky. But we're very thankful to God that he's kept it going and given us and sent us amazing staff, incredible resident parents, great teachers, all the support staff that are required, as you can imagine, to care for 100 to 130 kids on campus each year. It's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. And again, the structure is there, not just for the kids, it's for the entire operation, which leads me to you. I think you're a dynamo. I swear the first time I met you, I was like, this guy is great. He's a great guy. And again, you're also, you're dynamo, but you're patient. It's not like you're high energy bouncing off the wall and you got to calm down. No, no, you get stuff done, but it's not like, you know, you're hyper. And I always wondered, did you ever want to do anything other than work with Happy Hills Farms? And then also talk about how you kind of worked your way up to the position that you have now, because I think it's a perfect fit. Let's talk first about, did you ever think, well, you know what? I think when I grow up, I want to be a basketball player. Or, wait a minute, I think I want to be an astronaut, or maybe I want to be a scientist or get my own website. I mean, talk about what your dreams were and how it kind of matched up to, you know, eventually this is where I need to be.
Well, Chris, thank you for the compliment on my demeanor. I definitely get it from my mom. I try to be patient and calm. And
you
my
are.
Dad presents the other side of it. You know,
he's you're a little balance more, between both of them. I got
blessed. Blessed with seeing both in action. And so, you know, when I grew up, I wanted to be a rock star, to be honest. So I started playing guitar at about 10 years old. And saw a lot of success early, got in Guitar Player magazine at like 13.
Look at you.
Put out some instrumental shred metal stuff. If you like Steve Vai or Joe Satriani, that
I know
was my
who Steve
thing.
Vai is, yeah.
Oh, huge fan. So that's
Billy
all I
Idol's
listened to
guy. And did he work with Billy Idol?
He was with Frank Zappa.
That was his. That's right.
Yeah, Zappa. Yeah, he was with Zappa.
The mother of the invention.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And so crazy, crazy talented guitar player. And so I grew up in that kind of music. And you know, my mom and dad supported that. And I did that for a while, met my wife really young. And then in the process of that, became a Christian, started to listen to my grandfather and all the good lessons that he instilled in me that I didn't quite understand. And what I, you know, it's one thing growing up in a school where your peers are coming out of some rough situations, which was my childhood, and trying to figure that out and manage that out as far as friendship and what it looks like to grow up. And I didn't appreciate the transformative opportunities that he was providing those kids. And so I grew up a little bit, I got married, I went off to college, I got a degree. I decided, you know what, I want to teach these kids guitar. It was just kind of a secondary thought, like, you know, while I'm here, I'm in town, I'll do that. And I discovered, wow, I can have a much bigger impact than I thought. And so I started to spend more time with them. And then I went to seminary, became a pastor, started to care about their spiritual life and spent a lot of time with them in that context, and discovered, like, I get it. I finally get the vision that he had. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to see that sometimes it's the simplest of opportunities, just to know that you're around adults you can trust, to know where your next meal is coming from, to know that the teacher cares for you and there's only a few kids in a class and not 60, and to be in that open environment where they can run around at night and go play games with kids from other houses and get that social interaction and look people in the eye and all the things that we care about and we teach. I just started to fully embrace it. And when he passed in 2016 and he worked with me for a while before that, I got to spend some great years with him traveling to share these stories with donors. And I really fell in love with that part of it is, you know, not taking tax money, not relying on tuition as most boarding schools do. We have to be out there. We have to be out in the community sharing these stories, telling about all the good things that are happening in the lives of these kids. And it's much more than a full-time job, but we have a great staff and we go out there, and I'm sure you've seen the videos that we produce and the events like that we're having tonight. And we just want people to hear from the alumni, from the current students, because that's what it's all about. There's no other product, so to speak. We want these kids to be raised in a healthy, loving environment so they can be servant leaders and they can help the world.
You know, your message is transformable. In other words, when you talk to the donors or different groups, even just talking on this show, you're letting people know that guess what? There's some place out there that can actually, you know, uplift some kids, save their lives, transform their lives, and make the world a better place. With that being said, I'm sure every now and then you get a tough question from a donor or somebody that you might want to do business with some kind of way. What's some of the tough questions that you get? And then all of a sudden they go, oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'd say the toughest was probably about 10 years ago when my grandfather fundraised for a new school. And so it wasn't the school that my sister and I went to. We went to a very small one, very humble one, but he fundraised for a very nice large school that we built and discovered we had more space than we thought we did. And so we decided to open up part of our program to international students. We had some tough conversations around that. Why?
Oh yeah.
You know, aren't there enough international programs that are helping kids? And there are plenty. There are some amazing ones doing work in those countries. And one of the conversations I had to have with a foundation that was deciding or whether or not they were going to support us was really around the idea of, instead of going into some of these challenging places and doing a project that might last 1 to 3 years and then having to send another team in to, you know, put gas in the well or to rebuild something or whatever, we're kind of doing the opposite work in that those parents, those grandparents, the aunt and uncle, guardian in that country, they recognize the value of actually sending the student here to get an education, to be in a safe place, to really have a different set of worldview glasses, especially our girls that are coming from Africa. I mean, their just concept of everything, gender roles, equality, all of that is obviously completely different in the United States than it is in their home country. And we see the value in them experiencing that kind of love and acceptance. And then if they get an American, if they get into an American university and get a 4-year degree, they go back to their home country. They're almost guaranteed some sort of impactful job, maybe in government, maybe in a business, and they can actually enact change, real change. So that was the pitch. That was the difficult question of the why, because it's very expensive to scholarship an international student to come to the United States to go to high school. But the value is, you know, it's just beautiful to see these kids really embrace and understand our values and then go back into those places and take the positive parts of what they've learned and experienced and share them with other girls in those environments.
It's very transformative. And again, what you're saying is just so true. So when you were having to explain it, how many times did you have to fight them, or how many times did it take you to finally get it done? And in other words, I know this just didn't happen like, oh, one conversation and here, what, let's just do it. It's like, I'm sure it took a little process.
It did. You know, it's all about whether or not we're looking at the dollar amount or the end result.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking at the dollar amount, obviously you could make the case for a different type of organizational help to, let's say, Eastern Europe or Western Africa, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at the outcome, which is, you know, a completely transformed and renewed life, a super valuable educational experience, a global mindset, and, you know, all the blessings of the ag work, if they want to actually be in 4-H, the sports, the spiritual component. When you look at all of that, the outcome is a really well-rounded leader. And that's what we need. I mean, that, I think, doesn't matter where you're at on any kind of political spectrum. Everybody believes that we need better leaders. Yeah. And that's what we're trying to produce, whole, you know, healthy people. And so when I made that case, you know, it was basically every single individual, you know, maybe a foundation here or a donor here, really asked that question of, you know, are you shying away from American kids? No, absolutely not. We're still dedicated to helping kids from North Texas and all over the United States. But this is such a unique opportunity in the world that we live in, where it's easy to hop on a flight, where it's, you know, it's still relatively easy to get an educational visa, and we can really help.
You know, I like I said, this is just, I'm just grinning while you're telling these stories, and I'm loving it. And I'm like, okay, did they give you a time frame where this better work, Or did they say, okay, rubber stamp, you're good because we trust the process?
You know, being a family ministry, we really have just always tried to respond as best we can as leadership at Happy Hill Farm to what's going on in society. And so when I was a kid, when I was in school, that was the height of the teenage pregnancy and drug epidemic. And so we responded to that. We had a lot of different medical options there on campus as far as medical professionals. And as that, thankfully, a lot of those numbers have declined, but we have a whole new problem socially around kids and their anxiety and their depression, their exposure to things because of their phones and social media. And so it's all new. And so what we have always seen our role as is we're gonna look at kind of the middle rungs of the ladder and see where some of those kids are slipping, and we're gonna step in there and we're gonna go, hey, if you're having a problem with this, or if this is going on, or if we can really help here, we're gonna do that. And like I said, all our kids have the same thing in common in that they are very driven. They want to be there. They want to succeed. And when you combine an environment where you've got teachers and support staff that want a kid to succeed and the kid wants to succeed, that's where the magic happens.
You know what? I'm glad you brought this up about, you know, the kids today and some of the stuff they're dealing with, because sometimes there's a lot of people over the age of 40, 45, 50 years old that just cannot understand why it's tough for kids nowadays. And coming off of the pandemic, you know, I've learned, you know, talking to a lot of different organizations and leaders and educators, coming off that pandemic, there were a lot of kids who didn't know what the world was going to be for them.
Yeah.
They didn't know that it could be solved. They didn't know. And then you throw in with social media, which is a greater access to information. And sometimes that information is not accurate. It's just a theory. It's just, you know, whatever, whoever posted something up would think. They didn't know what to think, and it causes a lot of anxiety. It causes a lot of, you know, trust issues. It causes a lot of internalizing things, which unfortunately, and educators will say this, it causes kids to overthink and they just shut down. And some of them, you know, if they're not suicidal, they become depressed. And it's like that's a whole different issue than a lot of people had to deal with growing up, when all they had was, oh, we got five or six channels on TV, got a newspaper, and our parents were strong enough to tell you, turn off the TV, or, you know, not everything you read is the truth, you know, things like that. I was like, this is a whole different thing going on in 2024.
It is. And, you know, all the sociological data tells us that the amount of information we have access to, adults and kids, it's a double-edged sword. Obviously, you want to learn a language, you want to learn about a historical figure, you want to figure out a math problem. I mean, there's never been a time in human history where we can have access to that stuff immediately. But the other side of the razor's edge is we're really not made, adults or kids, we're really not built to know everything.
Yeah, we don't have the bandwidth. And we just don't have the bandwidth.
No, we don't. And adults, you know, that's up to you, right? You're a sovereign citizen. if you want to overwhelm yourself with information, that's that. But when you think about a kid and a developing brain and all of the uncertainty, like you were just saying, that the last 4 years have been defined by, just uncertainty after uncertainty after uncertainty, there's no way that they physically and emotionally, socially have the capability to handle all of that information. And so, you know, one of the transformative things about Happy Hill Farm is just that noise, that outside volume, that white noise, whatever you want to call it, it's just turned down a little bit on our campus. It's just turned down a little bit because we still value, you know, things like eating a meal together at a table with your residents. So those eight boys or those eight girls and their resident parents, you know, every night they're going to walk up to the dining center and they're going to sit down and they're going to have a meal together. And it's never, you know, it's awkward maybe for the first semester for some kids. You know, they want to get their phone out. They want to, they don't know why they have to do that. Can I just eat in my room?
Yeah.
And it's just like, no, we're going to go together. Mm-hmm. And by year two, year three, and then when I hear from them, when they call me as a 25-year-old and they're upset because none of their friends know how to go out for a meal or whatever, you know, all the weird things that we hear about people's cleanliness and their college roommate that's a slob.
Right.
You know, they call and they go, why isn't everybody like this? And, you know, it's just like, well, I'm really glad that you had a good foundation, that we still valued those things. And it doesn't solve everything. It's not a perfect fix, but just turning that volume down of everything that's going on in the world and constant exposure to everything really helps a kid.
Exactly. And before we get out of here, the big event is today. Then you have the golf tournament tomorrow. Where can people find out more information about, if not these two things, what you guys have coming up and how they might want to be a part of Happy Hills Farms?
Yeah. So if you want to come to the kickoff party tonight at Cinnamon Creek Ranch in Roanoke, you can register at happyhillfarm.org/golf. That also gives you all the information about our tournament tomorrow morning, starting at 9 at Trophy Club. Actually 8, because we're serving breakfast for all our players. Nice. So be there at 8, 7:30 if you want to warm up, putting greens open. So that's tomorrow, the 29th at Trophy Club. But again, happyhillfarm.org/golf. That's going to be the event tonight and the golf tournament tomorrow. If you want to just learn more about Happy Hill Farm, there's a video where you'll see me, you'll see beautiful drone shots of our campus. You'll really understand just how big this place is. You'll hear from some students. That video and the link to donate is at happyhillfarm.org/welcome. You can find that information.
Lucas, you are just, again, this is the perfect fit for what you do. It's always a pleasure having you on. We will follow up, and I can't wait till I see you again in person.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it.
It's been absolutely amazing. And we want to thank you, and want to also thank all of you for joining us on Better Living, a show about people or organizations having a big impact here in North Texas. I'm your host, Chris Arnold. So long, everybody.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.